Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
You're listening to The Overdrive on Chai FM. My name is Chad Thomas. I'm joined now by Darren Bergman. He's the Shadow Minister for International Relations and Cooperation. Darren, good afternoon to you, sir.
How's it, Chad?
Darren, today is a very significant day in history. On this day in 1994, the 7th of April, the genocide began in Rwanda. Over a million people were killed in the ensuing violence, and it has been regarded as genocide. In fact, it was the first genocide since World War II. We've seen an uptake in violence regarding supposed ethnicity with Russians and Ukrainians, which is impacting on the world, whether it's impacting on people from a personal perspective, whether people have family or they associate with people that side, or whether it's from a fiscal perspective, we're seeing the shockwaves that this is sending around the world. And of course, in South Africa, we no stranger to xenophobic attacks. We're no stranger to seeing different periods of our recent democracy where there's been attacks on foreign nationals. And we seem to be going through that at the moment. What is your take on this current mob justice that we're seeing towards foreign nationals?
Yeah, look, Chad, I mean, I've been trying to fight this for a long time coming. And, you know, for the fact that you mentioned, besides that, criminality is criminality, and you've got to fight that wherever it rears its ugly head. But when it comes to xenophobia, you know, you've got to use that word very, very, you know, you've got to use it on precious moments so that you don't desensitize yourself to it. And when it came to election time, I think government tried to divide us, and the EFF tried to divide us. In fact, a lot of the extreme parties try to use race to bait voters into, you know, to galvanize them into voting. And that's always a dangerous game that they play. And now when it comes to people starting their operations or going into townships, those very same politicians are all of a sudden very, very scarce. You know, those voices are very silent at this point in time.
It's a concern to us because we see what's happening. We're seeing that there is a lot of foreign nationals, but we're hearing comments. The DA's very own Jack Bloom came out the other day and said that perhaps the problems we're having with our healthcare in Gauteng is as a result of so many foreign nationals making use of those healthcare facilities, and perhaps we should send the invoice for that healthcare to those respective embassies. We had the CEO of the Rahima Musa Hospital say live on air on another radio station the other day that people come direct from Park Station to their hospital so that they can get better medical care than they'd most probably get in their own countries. What are these messages sending? What's been said here? Is there an underlying message, or are people genuinely concerned that our infrastructure is overburdened because of foreign nationals?
Well, there's definitely that. I mean, but there's no administration, you know, and the fact is if the administration worked itself out and if government was on top of administration, a lot of these problems would not be. So let's be honest with ourselves. If the economy was thriving and if people had jobs and the unemployment rate was not over 30%, there would be no such thing as xenophobia in South Africa. The fact that the economy is where it is and that unemployment is where it is why we're seeing things such as xenophobia. And they're blaming the wrong people. They're looking for scapegoats. And government, of course, is very complicit in this because, of course, it's convenient. So you get the president visiting or sending his minister to visit and then, you know, making the odd soundbite here and there. But it's a little, you know, it's lack of leadership. It fixes a symptom or puts another band-aid on an issue that's been brewing for so long. We've had these outbursts for the last few years. The truth is there's a lot of people taking up housing. There's a lot of people taking up jobs. There's a lot of people taking up hospital beds. A lot of them actually contribute to the tax system. A lot of them are actually entrenched in our system, and those that are here legally have a rightful place to stay. Those that are not in the system the correct way, they should be tracked and they should be sent back. And that's where Jack is also saying, you know, that an embassy also has a job to try and track down those that they're responsible for. They know their citizens are here. They have a job, you know, if they're not pushing their country to sort themselves out. So, you know, the DA has its own plan in saying that you know, with what's happening with Zimbabwe right now with the permits, the ZEPs, you know, we sit halfway in between where we're saying that it's not a bad thing that there's control over it. But to wake up when your systems don't work in South Africa and say, well, we're sending everyone back that doesn't qualify, which you actually don't know who qualifies and who doesn't qualify, you've got a horrible recipe for the violence that you're seeing right now. So the truth is if government actually sorted its own administration out, and we do blame the government for a lot of what we're seeing, and you can't just point fingers outside the borders, you have to actually look at our own government.
So I'd like to raise a point here, and to me, it's a point that doesn't get discussed enough. We've granted asylum status to a lot of people that have come to South Africa. There are a lot of conflict zones within Africa. We've seen over the years conflicts in Darfur, in Sudan, in Eritrea, in East Congo, Somalia, parts of Kenya. And we've opened up our borders to refugees whose lives are genuinely in danger because they come from a conflict zone. We also see a lot of economic refugees, people that have come from other countries where they cannot sustain themselves and they've come to South Africa and perhaps they're not contributing towards the fiscus like you've just pointed out and they've overstayed. But a lot of the time they are receiving refugee status despite the fact that their country is not experiencing any form of conflict whatsoever. Why is this happening?
Correct. That's exactly the system that I'm talking about. There should be a, you know, once your country is not in a state of war, you know, our administration boots should be picking that up. And that's when you don't qualify anymore. It's no use punishing the people that have contributed, that are entrenched in our system. And then those that aren't, that are, let's say, the criminals, that, you know, they don't come through the front door, they come through the back door, that they're allowed to stay because they bribe or they're allowed to take up houses that are meant for South African citizens because they've bribed the right officials or they're friends with the right politicians. So that's exactly the right point that you bring up, is that if your country is not in a state of war at this point in time and you still got refugee status in South Africa, or you actually in a better economic status than South Africa, because I think in West Africa and East Africa, it's actually easier to get higher growth than in South Africa at this point in time. You should be going back to your country. In fact, I'm sure there's a few South Africans that would want to rather get refugee status in that country.
So that takes me to my next point. Up until 1998, a specific West African country was under the control of a dictator by the name of Obasanjo. And in 1998, he decided to hand over to civilian rule. Democratic elections were held. And since then, this country is a functioning democracy. And the country I'm talking about is Nigeria. Yet we still have Nigerians that come to South Africa with refugee status. And this, to me, is confounding. I don't understand why this is happening. I know that there's conflict in certain areas of the Niger Basin with Mende. I know that in the north there's Boko Haram. But generally speaking, the refugees we are seeing coming into South Africa are from metropolis like Lagos or Abuja. And I'm not understanding how our government's thought process has gone about in not changing the designation of different countries from a refugee status perspective.
Well, they use both that, you know, the Nigerian province, the what they call the Niger State, but they also, of course, there's the undiplomatic relationship between Nigeria and South Africa at times, where, you know, we've seen it at airport spats where a plane has landed here or certain people have not been allowed through. South Africa would take a stance and then Nigeria takes the counter stance and all of a sudden there's a correction of behavior, so to speak. So it's almost who wags the tail, who wags the head between Nigeria and South Africa. So I wouldn't say, you know, it's refugee status, but I'd say it's more, you know, it's more coming from the fact that I think Nigeria also sometimes dictates to South Africa as to what will happen. So a lot of the time, I think South Africa is under obligation to accept Nigerians in terms of, you know, let's call it quiet diplomacy.
Well, Darren, I appreciate you taking the time out today to chat to us. And I hope that we see a change in attitude from government because we're doing a disservice to people who are in our country that are genuinely in need of our help. But at the same time, even those that aren't in need of our help, that may be taking advantage of our country and its infrastructure, do not deserve to be treated as subhuman. We have a Bill of Rights, we have a constitution, and we need to remember that everybody is equal under the law.
Correct. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate that.